and welcome to the Advent IM podcast. I'm joined here today by Patrick Mabrierty, who is the Cybersecurity Protect Officer at the Regional Organised Crime Unit for the West Midlands. Patrick, hi.
Hello there.
I thought maybe for some of our listeners who aren't familiar with the work that the police are doing in the area of cybercrime, it might be useful if you introduce the work that you do and maybe tell us a little bit about the four Ps.
Okay, yeah. The UK is considered to be the fifth biggest economy in the world. 1/8 of the UK's GDP comes from its online economy. So it makes it an interesting target for cyber criminals. And the reason why I say that is because, thankfully, it has been realised that there is a clear desire need to deal with cyber crime and targeting the UK. So a lot has been done since 2010, 400 million initially, and then 600 million is currently the budget to deal with cybercrime is around about 1.9 billion at the moment. So, and how that is structured is if we're going to give like a bit of a family tree view of it, we've got the GCHQ at the top there, and sitting with GCHQ is the NCSE, the National Cybersecurity Centre, and then probably just below that is a national crime agency, and within that you've got the National Cyber Crime Investigation Unit, and the people who work closely with them is people from my department. The Regional Organised Crime Unit works very close to the National Crime Agency, and within the National Regional Organised Crime Units, which cover between 4 and 6 police forces of the 43 in England and Wales, and then we've got the one in Northern Ireland and Scotland, we have a regional cyber team. And within the cyber team, the reason why I've described it like that is just to give the sort of structure. So how we approach cyber crime within the regional cyber team is following the 4 Ps model. So we have the prevent, protect, prepare and pursue. And I'm sure sometimes the Ps get swapped around a little bit, but I always say it like that because I think it's the most appropriate way, one, to describe and potentially the most appropriate way to approach the problem. The prevent side of what we do is it's not connected in any way to the counter-terrorist world of prevent. It's all about intervention, education, to try and highlight to people who sadly are predominantly young. I'm not being biased here in any way, but it does predominantly, the average age of a hacker is 17 years old. So getting in there early is the ideal scenario. So it's not about criminalizing, because the prevent officers will deal with people who have committed certain low level offenses and try to guide them more appropriately after their potential skirmish with the law. But even on the higher scale, they will start to come in terms of an offender managing role. But a lot of what they do does tend to be within education in both ways you could approach that, just education as in developing awareness, but also within education establishments, because it tends to be predominantly young people. And one of the ways they do that is the various government initiatives like Cyber First and various other initiatives that are run, but also within the education establishments and big events like gaming events. We do find there's a fair few come from the gaming community. Not suggesting they're all into criminality in the cyber world, but also, like, for example, not too long ago at the security event that was, it was more of an education and engineering and STEM subjects, basically, at the NEC not that long ago. And we set up our stand, and we had things like, we had little games, like, so you could come up and you could use our laptops and you could work out that you're there, your firewall, and you have to say, based on the information we provided, would you say yes or would you say no? And we had a lot of young people come up and wanted to play the game. Interestingly, we had a young lad come up to us who was 8 years old, and he got 10 out of 10 on that game. And when we were talking to him about the what do you like about computers and what do you like about the cyber world, and his answer was Python, C, and all that. So, albeit he was young and he was at a basic level, he was coding in 3 languages. So we did a little prevent message with him and his mother, who was a lovely lady, and with his. I think you might want to come over to some of our colleagues over at GCHQ, because I thought, well, if the lad of 8 years old now who'd set up his own website at home and his own network goes rogue, I think potentially we're all in trouble here.
So, I mean, I can relate to that because, you know, as a teenager, I was a kid in my bedroom effectively hacking games because that was the resource available to me. And I think in some ways, and I look back now and I think in some ways, I'm kind of glad that we didn't have the internet when I was at that stage, because I could very easily have ended up in trouble. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, there is, with children and young teens who are very technically capable, who are coding, who are exploring for the first time their capabilities, particularly in the online world, that there potentially will be a crossroads they will come to where the choice is there for them. Then, you know, some of those will come into the security world and they'll become, you know, ethical hackers, they'll become coders, they'll become security professionals. But of course, some of them are going to go in the opposite direction and they're the future cyber criminals. And of course, for them now, it's second nature because they've been born with this.
Yes.
Whereas many security professionals, certainly, you know, when I look around my peer group, we're all, you know, pushing into the 50s, hobbyist practitioners. And in some ways, you know, this is a learned behavior for us, whereas the kids of today, this is something that they're born with and have at their disposal for their entire lives.
It's true, because it's like when you get laptops now, you can't even get you can't get the facility to put a disk in anymore. Never mind a floppy disk, a compact disk. And I know some of you may hear this and think, what was that you referred to? And yeah, it's just, and yeah, it's, and I heard somebody speaking about security, and I think he summed up security in general so brilliantly. And he said, it's not about also bolting on or learning. Well, if we don't know, then we have to learn, but it's about blending in. It's about normalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he summed it up absolutely brilliantly. And that's the thing. And as you said about, and we said, and I mentioned earlier about the gaming community, obviously not suggesting for a second all gamers are hackers, but there is a certain thing that gamers are doing that they don't even give a second thought to because they want to get ahead of the game. So they're knocking off their colleague, their friend who's the other side of the city, other side of the country. But basically they just hack their network. And some never do anything ever again like that. But in the gaming community, I know that's quite popular thing to do. And some never do anything more. But unfortunately, some of them are being found years later as backtrack. And they're getting spoken to years later. And they're actually at university now. They're like 3 years into their degree. That could have potentially, although we've potentially just gone just for a chat, that could have been slightly more of a chat. And it would have been horrendous to ruin their lives. So it's good that they're aware of that.
Certainly, I was at a panel debate in the Northeast yesterday, and we were talking there about the need to introduce the concept of security, online safety, cyber, and also the legalities of behaviour to a much younger audience than we currently do, and having a much better outreach into the school programme to educate youngsters. A, because, you know, they're exposed to so much more danger online now than ever before, and there's so much going on in the world of grooming, and you know, we're seeing children being blackmailed after, you know, being convinced to take pictures of themselves and things like that. But also, you know, we want them to be aware actually that there is a consequence to some of their behavior, and, you know, stuff they put on social media, things that they do online, you know, whether it is just, you know, non-malicious hacking of networks or whatever, can come back and bite them in future years. And see, because we want to actually get into their mindset at an early age that this is a career choice if they've got those skills. And it's not just something that that can get them into trouble.
Absolutely, and a very lucrative career. You just have to do some basic scanning for jobs and you see some of the requirements that they, but then you look at the salary bit and you can have a nice, you can have a really work for a prestigious company, good salary, good everything you want, nice car, go on holidays, everything you want. Or you could be, unfortunately, have a criminal record and then try to get jobs that are very, very much inappropriate for the person, the individual. And I think there has been a couple of videos from some of our colleagues in Wales and the NCA who've got a little video that you can get on their website, and it shows this. Shows the guy actually doing something which he's clearly way too qualified to do, but he has no choice. That's all he can do, unfortunately.
Because he's got a criminal record.
Yeah, he's got a criminal record, and obviously there is that debate as well that in hiring somebody who's done a bit of hacking, done a bit of naughtiness, you could say, and then but some companies are probably not so keen to hire them because how can we be 100% confident that they're not trying to just merge themselves into our company to do their naughtiness again? So, and it's almost like it's like reputation it takes a lifetime to build up, and then some people have been taken down with a viral tweet.
Yeah, we've debated this actually a couple of times in the past about hiring ex-hackers as security professionals and the ethics and the morality and the trust and everything else that goes around that. But also, of course, if you operate as we do in certain sectors, these are people who you're never going to be able to get security clearance for. So,
Very
our
true.
customers, I think, would be very wary about the idea that they're trusting their security to an ex-criminal.
Yes, very, very true, because there's various different levels of security clearance, and you will never get the top level for the top jobs if you've been too naughty in your background. Like if it's the most minor thing, they will take everything from, but that's a really, really good point. I couldn't agree more.
So, moving on then from the preventing to the world that you work within, then the protect world, what's that all about?
Well, the theory is the model, I personally think the model is a very good model. It's a really good approach. So in a theory, we can prevent everybody from becoming cyber criminals. Great. I don't need the other P's. That's not the reality. Of course, that is not the reality. So the next stage would be the protect strand, which would be me coming along, hopefully, and through education and awareness, protecting everybody from becoming a victim. So we haven't managed to negate all the cyber criminals. We know there's going to be still people out there who are interested in doing things illegally on the internet, targeting people. So if I can just come along, do through either a 20-minute presentation or a 4-hour workshop, or even sometimes all day, by just upskilling people, making them aware through education and awareness. And there's little, we're getting more and more tools now as well that we can sort of do more interactivity. So, and I know we've all been there. And an expression that I sometimes use, death by PowerPoint. I won't come along and just put you through 50 slides. I like to try and show videos, and sometimes they're humorous, and but just get the point over in an enjoyable way. But I also do like Kahoot. I'll use that, and I'll just do quizzes. And one of the things I like to do is through the National Cybersecurity Centre annual report of risk and trends, I get like the top four current established issues and the current additional five, but certainly those five that we're going to see more and more in the future. So I just blend them in and just do a little competition, and people you can you interact with your mobile phone, you put your name in. It can be your real name or a fake name, it doesn't matter as long as it's not rude or offensive. But and you get it, you very quickly find, I've never done it yet where it hasn't been really, really well received. But what they don't realize is at the end of it, they've just, in a fun way, learnt the four current trends and five up and coming trends. So we'll do that. But we will also, so it's the key, it does seem to be, and one of the truest things ever said is education, education, education. And sadly, what I have found is because to do my job, you don't necessarily have to be particularly very technical. You need to be a good learner. You need to be aware of certain things. But my job, certainly as a protect officer as well, is very much, and I personally and professionally like to focus on the individual, because you can look at something which talks about how we used to live 500 years ago, and we look at science fiction programs, how we're going to live in it. What you will see, very common theme there, is people, and people are emotional. Like, and I don't mean that's a bad thing, not for a second. We are people, we're only human. And that's why I like to try and focus. And I do routinely highlight a particular thing that the government did, was a real protect message or something out there saying about think before you click. And I focus a lot on trying to say to people, I say to people, how many times have you said to somebody when they've done something and they regret it, or there's been some fallout, oh, what were you thinking? Or themselves, what was I thinking? And the reality is, if you really analyze it enough, you weren't thinking. In their defense, I don't expect them to think about something they don't know. So you can't know what you don't know. So I try to just get people a bit more aware and to maybe just stop and think as well, because the biggest problem that vast majority of the malicious code and the software that's delivered is delivered via emails, and there's like five types of phishing that is carried out, and but the vast majority of ransomware attacks are delivered through a phishing email. The phishing emails are not about the member of royal family trying to wanting to park a large sum of money in your account and then give you the interest. They are becoming very sophisticated. But again, what I say to people is, and to quote I think Tony Bauer, I think it was a really good guy from Action Fraud, he says, don't chase the narrative. So he says, don't try and keep yourself up to date on all the current, this is how they're doing it, that's how they're doing it, oh, that's how they did it last month, so that's how they're doing it next month. He says, but you can look for certain things. And again, I go back to the human. And what I would say is, within a phishing email, which again delivers a vast majority of ransomware to individuals and organizations, is you'll find something which comes completely out of the blue. And I thought, this is a bit strange. Then think about, has this email just come out of the blue out of nowhere? Is it, and I know it's a very well said saying, is it too good to be true? The absolute vast majority of, I don't even go out on a limb and to be unsafe and say all the time, it's, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true, it's not true. But what it's also you find in phishing emails as well, because you used to be able to look for very unsophisticated things like the odd spelling error. But sadly, I know that certain people have deliberately put spelling errors in phishing emails because they see it as a bit of a triage. Think, right, certain people will see this and negate it, and some people won't see it, and so they're going like this, rubbing their hands together, thinking, great, they haven't seen this, so what else can I now get through to them? But there tends to almost always, and the levels of subtlety depends in that there's a sense of urgency and a threat. So half your money's gone, do this now or your other half is going to go, or we're do this offer only exists, you will have to pay twice the money if you don't. So then that's two different ways I've just then got across the sense of urgency and the threat.
And shortening the thinking time.
Exactly. And bearing in mind we're all busy, life is stressful, I'm always on public transport. The amount of people I hear, people either having a little disagreement on the phone or talking to somebody about a disagreement they've had. So they're stressed, they're emotional, they're distracted. So they're not going to always think. It's like, and I've done presentations in the past where almost every fourth slide was think before you click. And then I talk a little bit, think before you click. So just really trying to get it blended in rather than just bolted on.
I know I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter over the last couple of months about take five.
Yes.
Just having that moment to sort of step back and look at it and think about what you're doing
yes.
Can really reap a huge amount of rewards. But I mean, I'm old enough and I've been in security long enough that I remember the first truly successful global virus, the I Love You virus, which arrived in an email,
Yeah.
ironically, and it's sort of 20 odd years ago now. So the MO actually isn't changing that much. And
No.
the I Love You virus relied on people believing that somebody they'd never met before had fallen in love with them and sent them a love letter, and people fell for it.
Yes.
And in hindsight, you think, how could anybody be that naive? Well, of course they were. And although the messaging has changed, so that was quickly followed by then the coronavirus, and then that was followed by the virus warning virus, which effectively arrived as an email and said, the attached is a warning about a virus that's going around, but the attachment was actually the virus. And that was creating that sense of urgency, danger, there's a virus. Well, of course, we'd already had two big viruses that have been widely publicized. So people then think, oh, not another one. I need to find out about this.
Yes.
And as you're saying there, that creates that sense of urgency and reduces the thinking time. People fell for it.
Yes.
And here we are 20 years on, and we're saying exactly the same thing.
Yes.
That these criminals are exploiting human nature. And yet, for 20 years, we've been relying on the IT people to look after all of our assets. We're relying on the technology to do it for us, when actually, its behavior is fundamental to good
Absolutely.
security.
Oh, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with everything you said. And the five current but soon future developing issues in the National Cybersecurity Report is also worms. So people think, how often do people hear about worms anymore? They're hearing ransomware, they're hearing DDoS, they're hearing phishing emails. I think everybody's always continually heard, but and unfortunately, when it's often sometimes just a new way of doing an old thing or an old thing done in a new way. And you just have to look at in 2016, the survey of the crime statistics, and they found that 50% of all crime was fraud and online crime. And that was 50%. So those just those fraud and online crime, that's 50%. And then the other 50% was every other crime anybody can ever think of. And that's just shocking.
Amazing.
And unfortunately, as I said, we're like it's cutbacks everywhere. So people, like you said, they're breaking down that thinking time. And unfortunately, the people are understandably up against it personally, professionally, emotionally, in every way. And because it's like, yes, you're getting some people and they've like took on another half a job. They've got their job and now someone's left and that role has been devalued over another two people. So we should have had three. And so you're getting that. And the other thing again as well, is that the top 10 passwords. Anybody who listens to this, Google the top 10 passwords and you may find it quite amusing. And I hope you do, because and I hope that that does then spur you on to think, oh, well, as long as I'm not in there, I'm already ahead of the game. And that's what it is. It's also about the path of least resistance. And like if you put the cheapest, nastiest lock on your front door, you're more likely to be burgled than the person next door.
And
So
that's really what we're doing when we use a poor password, is we're putting a really cheap, nasty
yeah.
lock on there. Or in some cases, not even bothering to lock the door when we go away on holiday, and then wondering why we get burgled.
That is so true, because if you put a password as 12345, you may as well just not bother, because that can be broken quicker than you can say the word instantly. So they protect. So ideally, the second P is, so we haven't prevented all cyber criminals, so let's protect all potential injured parties. We say in the police, but also people tend to use the word victim, but in the police we say injured party. So am I going to protect all people, potential victims or injured parties? I'm not naive as to think that that's going to happen. But I'm quite personally, professionally, very motivated to try and do whatever I can, whatever that is, to try and certainly reduce as many as possible. So then the next P comes along and that's prepare. So sadly, we know we're not going to stop all cyber criminals. We know we're not going to protect all potential victims. We know certain things are going to happen. And it's like when you look at things like about even though there is a lot of issues with health, public health and what have you, and you get there's a lot of this talk about people and their diets and what have you, but generally probably things are much people are much healthier. But great, on the other side, I'm really pleased to see how many public places has defibrillators. So sadly, they're doing all the prevention, the protection, and but we are sadly we know what's going to happen. So the defibrillators is brilliant. They're everywhere now, thankfully. So the prepare is about backing up your data, to cut a long story short. But it's not just about backing up your data, it's a lot more than that. But if I was to only able to say one sentence, I would say back up your important data. Because I've got a laptop at home and I've got other things that I've done whereby I've backed up my data. They talk about the 3-2-1 rule. Save it three times in two locations. The one most important thing for you. So photographs that mean the most to me are backed up four times. I've even gone the one stage further, like it's on the in the cloud. It's on the laptop maybe, but usually it's not on a laptop because it'll just slow down with all the digital photos. But I've got external hard drive and I've got one of them in my drawer at work. So God forbid my home burns down. So it's pretty much fail safe. I know for small, medium businesses, particularly medium to big to large organizations and big private businesses, it's potentially not within reason. Sometimes maybe they've got so much data that is possibly not an ideal scenario. But unfortunately, if at all possible, it needs to be done, because if you get hit by the most common cyber attacks now, which is ransomware, you will hear ransomware, ransomware, ransomware. And that was the most famous one in the UK has now been the WannaCry on the NHS. And I think you say there's a ransomware to somebody and they'll say, oh, I don't know what you mean. You say WannaCry, they probably know what you mean. Because they know the NHS, the thing that's probably most important to anybody else in the anybody in the whole country. NHS was hit. one third of their NHS trusts were badly affected. There's even stories of people being in the middle of an MRI and the thing stopping. And that infected 300 devices in 150 countries, and it was public, private, and third sector that was affected, and the NHS was obviously badly affected.
Well, the thing about these attacks is they're indiscriminate, aren't they? They're not targeted first and foremost. We talk about it as a ransomware attack, but actually what we're doing is we're taking the malware in and allowing it to spread across our organization. It's not attacking us per se. And there's a bit of a misnomer when it's reported in the media as a ransomware being a cyber attack. Actually, it's bait that's put out there to tempt us to then interact with it.
Again, I completely agree because cybercrime is different, and it's different for two main reasons. One, pretty much what you've just said, a lot of it is automated, and lots of, say, a zombie army, botnets, devices are infected, and their processing power is then harnessed to do various things, which is to either hack into something or to deliver ver to basically to hack to a large extent. And unfortunately, it's again goes back to the path of least resistance. If you have the most minimal security, that processing power used collectively is going to barely even realizes even a password or any security if it's the most minimum you can get. Whereas if and it's automated, so the person who's actually sent it out to do its de deadly deed will probably even know that it's even tried to hack him or her or them or this until they've been successful. So, and it's different. Like, sadly, if someone got robbed in the street, sadly, the offender is probably not that far away where they live, but this could be somebody at the other side of the world. And again, more to the point, it's automated, it's different. And then all it so the person gets then the cyber offender probably gets an email saying, yeah, we've been successful and this is what we've got for you. Oh, brilliant. So they don't even care until it's been successful.
So that must put a huge challenge then on the actual policing element of it, in terms of actually going and finding the criminals and prosecuting them, that this globalization element and cross jurisdiction aspect must make policing the internet an incredible challenge for people like yourselves.
Yes, and I will by no means suggest that the policing can be carried out by us, the police, because as far as I'm concerned, and I've done things academically as well as professionally, policing pretty much comes down to roughly three stages, or sorry, more to the point, three categories, and that it's private policing, public policing, which is, you could say, us, and societal policing. And as a protect officer, if I can go and deliver to the biggest audience possible, that's why I think this is a great thing, opportunity for me as a professional police officer to be working in conjunction with you guys, is to get this message out because we need the listeners, we need all the people who sit in my presentations, to do at least one thing, and that they probably wouldn't have done if they hadn't have listened to me. There is no way in the world we can protect or police. Full stop, end of story. We need societal policing to take to stand up, and it does, but we just need to sort of harness the power of that. And when it comes to being prepared as well, and it'll take me quite nicely onto the pursue element because be in pre preparation, for example, and I read, and I'm sure, I think it was a Ministry of Housing, Community and Local Government, and forgive me if I've got that wrong, but it was definitely a government department. It had done research into preparing for to have good business continuity plans and to preparing for a disaster. And they found the people who took part in the survey, so and I think about life often in general, but certainly with the cyber, everything we say about organizations and businesses, you can apply to an individual. And they in this survey, they found that of the people who took part in the survey, 91%, which I thought was brilliant, had a business continuity plan. However, that was the only good part of this survey because only 46% of the people in these organizations had allocated any sort of money or expenses towards supporting this plan. And 75% of the 91% who did have a business continuity plan had never even practiced it.
So it just becomes paper assurance, doesn't it?
It's just paper document gathering dust. So, again, with us delivering appropriately the four P's, or more to the point, the three P's, the initial three P's, because it's also about on the prevention, going back to the prevention. If you know somebody is potentially doing something they shouldn't, the police officers who work in our prevent strand are not looking for one moment to criminalize people. But you may think, oh, they're doing stuff and they're not really listening to me, or I don't think they might listen to me. Interacting with us, literally just saying, do you realize you're breaching Section 1 and Section 2 of the Computer Misuse Act? And they say, oh my God, I didn't know that. I didn't realize.
And just giving them a nudge in the right direction before they become criminalized.
Exactly. And then on the protect strand, for me, saying, please don't use password 12345. And then on the preparation side of it, if God forbid, we don't stop the cyber criminal from attacking you, and even though you put good security measures in place, that you have yourself set up in such a way that your computer goes funny and it says, right, pay us money, otherwise you can't get access to your files and your data. But if you've got it backed up appropriately, then you can then say, right, I'll give you a two-finger salute, in all honesty, and I can just wipe the computer and start again, because what's really important to me is backed up, certainly as
Yeah,
an
the vast
individual.
majority of organizations who end up paying ransomware, the truth is they pay because they're not resilient and they're not prepared, and they haven't put the effort into being adequately prepared and resilient. So those first three P's are very much about helping us to help ourselves,
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
we can be part of the solution, which I think has been messaging that we've had in traditional policing for a long time as well, isn't it? You know, the reduction in household burglaries was very much delivered through an educational program, and you know, be aware when you go on holiday, you know, close your curtains, cancel the milk, don't leave your
Yeah.
papers on the doorstep type of thing. Have a neighbor pop in every now and again, leave a radio on a timer so people think there's somebody in the house, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's about deterring the criminal by not being seen as an easy target. And I think this is, you know, very much we're talking about the same thing, but with the online world.
Absolutely. And the thing is, we have what would commonly be termed as the real world, and I think we all probably instantly get where that's coming from. But we have the virtual world, and what happens in the real world will affect you in the real world, of course. But what happens in the virtual world that people sadly don't necessarily realize is won't just affect you in the virtual world. It will definitely, most of the time, affect you in the real world. Small businesses might not survive a cyber attack. They could be out of they could be offline for say 3 4 days. It could cost them so much money, they lose so much custom, and unfortunately they have to just give up. And this isn't just a victimless crime. This is potentially two or three employees for a small business, or four or five, and now they've got to look for another job. So, and to allude slightly, although we won't go into too much detail about the Pursue Element are fantastic at what they do. They're really, really good. But you people, I'm sure everybody who knows even the slightest amount about the internet or the World Wide Web knows that by its very nature and its name, the World Wide Web, that it is worldwide. So it's very complicated investigations and they're quite time consuming. So I know if at all possible you need to avoid being caught up in a Pursue investigation. So you need to play your part on the first three P's.
Right.
But in terms of the complication as well, the other thing you could say is that it's not always what you do, it's how you do it. So for example, the email that will come to you will be like a spear phishing email attack that will come to you because it is meant for you. And the reason why it's meant for you and how it's been able to be focused on you is because of the activity we take part on in line online, such as social media being the most more obvious one. People do some very weird things online. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that anybody closes down all their social media accounts. But I am very, very keen to express the desire to behave appropriately online, because sadly there seems to be like a barrier missing, and people are, and politicians, like them or hate them, are getting subjected to horrendous abuse online. It is shocking the level of abuse
Yeah,
they get.
people seem to behave in a way online that they would never dream of behaving
Exactly.
in their own world, in the real
Exactly.
world. Yeah.
And I think
And of
that.
course, and they give away so much information about themselves online
Exactly.
without thinking about how easily that's then going to be disseminated and exploited.
Absolutely, and I think that's two things. There's a more possibly more than two things in that people then feel, well, it's online, yeah, it's okay, only my friends can see it. Oh, I can assure you that's not necessarily the case. And so when you showed your new passport, which I've seen on your Facebook account, and you think, oh, just your friends can see this. Yes, you could lock it down, but I don't want to go into too much detail with that. But unfortunately, putting your passport online, full stop, that is a big mistake. If you want to show your friends, just say, oh, I've got my nice new passport, so it's just in time for my holiday. Don't photograph it and put it on Facebook. And if you're going away for 2 weeks, like you were saying about cancelling the milk and putting the timer on the lights at home, don't say, first of all, don't say on your own account that, oh, I'm going away for 2 weeks, and then post every time, every day of your holiday. But also bear in mind that even if you don't do that, if you're part of a local group, you don't say, I can't wait, make next week's meeting. I'm away for 2 weeks in wherever. So it's again, so there's clearly those, and that you can put an analogy in the real world in the on the online world. And the thing is as well, it's also, you have this thing which is very well known, secure by design. And so the aim there is to design out crime. And the police does have design out crime officers. And secure by design, as we've recently saw, has celebrated its 30th year anniversary. And I
So that's
bet you,
nearly as old as the internet itself, then, which is 30 years this year as well.
absolutely, yeah, same year. So they're both celebrating the same anniversary. And it's disappointing to see 30 years of the World Wide Web is still being accessed by people putting 12345 as their password. So designing out crime, secure by design, and the recent event at IFSEC 2019, secure by default. Unfortunately, the reasons for this is because, unfortunately, the human element, the human error, sadly can't be relied upon. And I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just saying, because we're all human, I'm a human, I'm an individual, and I'm a police officer in that order. But so this secure by design and designing our crime and secure by default is a necessity, unfortunately, because it's not enough. But it's, and security, as we've always said, is it's about like layers. And the most famous potential way to anonymize your activity online is through the Tor browser, which stands for the Onion Router, because of the layers that it allows to be anonymous. And that's what we need, that's what we've always tried to do with security, put those layers in.
There's been a lot in the news over recent months about organised crime gangs and county lines. In fact, Lynn Owens was in the news recently saying that there are about 180,000 individuals linked to serious and organised crime here in the UK, which is about twice the number of people who are employed by the British Army. So that, when you put that into a perspective like that, that's a phenomenal amount. She talked about organised crime being toxic and corrosive and killing more people in the UK than any other factor. How are those organised crime gangs moving into the online world?
Well, without any sort of direct figures, but you just have to think, well, why do people rob banks? That's where the money is. So cyber criminals, from my personal and academic history, has been sort of reading about motivations and trends and how things change. When you looked at back on the 2016 survey that we made reference to, and you can see we're not also not seeing too much publicity about how crime figures have come down, because one argument could be that crime hasn't come down, but it's just changed. And so when you going back to the reference about why do banks get robbed, it's because that's where the money is. Well, now it's how do banks get robbed, and how is money made on, and it's always about risk and reward. So, and unfortunately, that does feel to an extent within policing often a process of ca keeping catch up. So, from my experience, I've seen some very inventive ways to carry out criminality. So, it seems to be when you consider the risk and reward and the inventive access to potential money in a criminal way, then it tends to be increasingly popular within organized crime, which unfortunately, then when you think about the complication of it when investigating, is making, and when he says, you quote those figures, it's been twice the size of the British Army. That speaks volumes, that does.
Yeah.
When you think a country's army, and everybody thinks, if you come with an army, it's an expression that you've come with a lot of people. And when you, that's actually quite a good statistic to quote, when you, and comparison to make.
Do you think also the language, I mean, you know, when we talk about cybercrime, we seem to almost talk about it in a completely different way to the way we talk about traditional crimes. You talk about banks. You know, if you walk into a bank with a sawn-off shotgun, it is armed robbery.
Yes.
But you take £10 million out of the banking system with a computer, and it's white-collar crime. And now I just think there seems to be a disconnect there. One's a serious crime, and the other is, you know, is cybercrime, is you maybe get 4 to 6 years. But you rob a bank with a shotgun, you might get up to 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, when you walk into a building and you hold people in those building hostage, you are a terrorist. But when you do it with ransomware, it's somehow treated as though it's a much lesser crime, even though you're doing exactly the same thing.
It is. One of the things I would say about that is the primary piece of legislation to deal with crime in the digital virtual world is the Computer Misuse Act of 1990, which sounds a little ridiculous when you think about it, because you think 1919, it's 2019. Mm-hmm. However, that has been reviewed, and I think it was 2007. So that now the maximum sentence, in theory, depending on the offence, using when you've committed the offence and obviously breached the various sections of the Computer Misuse Act, it can be now life imprisonment. So I'm glad to say that's the case, because it would be unfortunate if you just thought, well, I'll just do everything cyber related and then I'll get maybe a very small fine or a slap on the wrist or something. But I've done the same thing.
Mm.
The other thing is as well, that if you steal £10 million, there's going to be a lot of effort put into finding you. But if you steal £1 from 10 million people, how will the same effort be employed?
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. So that sort of same amount of reward, but through a distributed attack rather than one big attack, makes it more likely that they'll go unnoticed. And more likely that their crime will go unreported, of course, as well.
Absolutely, because one of the things that two things, slightly different from each other, but one of the things is, first of all, going back to 2016, there was around 6 million offences we found in the survey, but only 30,000 were actually reported. So it's dramatically underreported offence. But also, it's also about incentive. Like, so if somebody doesn't do something which we always advise with traditional fraud, and even probably more so now with cybercrime and the fact that potentially as much as 70% of fraud is now online, is one of the real basic things we tell people as well is to monitor your account.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do think, oh, hang on a minute, where's that £1 gone? You might not be that bothered. But I would be very concerned, not about the money, even if it was a penny. Where's that gone? Who's that? How does that gone out of my account? So we tell people, one of the big things in fraud is to monitor your account. But then, as you rightly said, going back to the figures I just referred to, and what you said, is that you'll get people who just can't be bothered. That was quite a negative statement, but I don't want to come across, because we've got very busy lives and people got so much going on. But unfortunately, you will get that. So
I think that's probably also an expectation from the individual, that it will feel slightly ridiculous to go to the police and say, I've lost a pound.
Yeah. Well, my reply to that would be is, because you're quite right, that actually puts it nicely into perspective there. But the problem is fraud and now cybercrime, which is... cybercrime is defined in two different ways. It's enabled and dependent. Dependent being you use a computer, on a computer network to attack a computer and a computer network, whereas enabled would be committing all offences in a new way, such as doing things like getting people to give you money online. Mm-hmm. And as you said, in terms of reporting a pound being stolen, I think it's a very fair argument. It's difficult to argue against that. However, the one thing I would say is, first of all, I would, no matter what, if it was unknown to me, I would be reporting. If it was a penny, I was thinking, well, hang on, just in case no one's highlighted this to you, is there potentially a vulnerability that's been tested by taking a penny or a pound? Yeah. That's one. So I'd certainly be telling the bank. But what also is what I think a lot of people don't do as well is that they think, I've told my bank and that's it. I don't need to report it to the more obvious authorities. We say to people, well, where do you report cybercrime to? Where do you report online fraud or fraud in general? And they say, well, to the police. Technically, it's not the case. It's actually action fraud. And we do get two types of reaction when we talk about action fraud. We tend to get the reaction whereby, don't know what you're talking about, never heard of them. Or, yeah, I've spoken to them and I haven't had the best interaction. And I can assure you that from my experience in speaking to Action Fraud, who've come and done presentations to me, because if I mention them, I need to know about them, and I interact with them, I'll be setting up a meeting again soon with them. They do a lot of good work, but I'll be totally honest, their name is a little misleading. Action Fraud would suggest that these are the Action Fraud Investigation Police. They're not really. Action Fraud work with the National Fraud Intelligence Bureau, and they, Action Fraud, you could argue, it's a bit more to it, take the report, and then they then provide the report to the National Fraud Intelligence Bureau. But going back to the £1 report, some people would only report it to the bank, and they think they've done what they mm-hmm. need to do. And I can sort of, I totally, again, as an individual rather than a police officer, I totally get that. However, Action Fraud aren't getting a report, so unfortunately, nobody's reporting that they've had £1 stolen. If suddenly 100,000 people said, you know, it's really weird, I've had £1 stolen. They think, hang on, we've had 100,000 of these reports now.
And then you get a trend analysis going and exactly. It paints a bigger picture, doesn't it?
And Unfortunately, we hear about in more, this most horrendous things that we've seen in the years have come by with, unfortunately, neglect of children and stuff like that. And the reason why I make that in comparison is with cybercrime is because, sadly, when they get investigated, you look and the police, the social services get, and I'm not saying it hasn't been errors made and people done things wrong and they need to be held accountable. But what you are finding, and from my experience with investigations, you are finding as well that nobody has really been told. Mm. Social services haven't been told, teachers, the police, they haven't been told certain things, and they're not been able to put it together and to do something. So unfortunately, thankfully, that survey in 2016 is probably the reason why I'm here now doing this, because for anybody who's listening, probably especially for the West Midlands police area, funding for my job, my role, doesn't come from the local policing budget. It comes from a central government pot, because they know that the UK as a country, as a the union, is susceptible to cyber criminality because of these reasons. So they have put money into trying to deal with this mm-hmm. and to make the UK a hostile environment. And that's where my funding comes from. So I don't come out of the local policing budget. But the main point I wished to make there is that if we didn't do that survey and find out what a big number of issue that it was, 30,000, they would not have funded my position. They thought, oh, we only get 30,000 a year, we're really good. But thankfully, somebody had the foresight to do a bit more digging. And depending on what you read, you might find that 6 million could be as little as 1/16th of the true figure.
Right.
So it's dramatically underreported.
It's a bit like conductive metal theft, isn't it? It was only when the telecoms companies all came together
Yes. And
they compared data with each other that we truly realised the scale of the problem there.
Yes.
And, you know, since then, you know, the government set up task forces, the Home Office is running a panel on it, and, you know, it's become a national priority.
Yes.
But it can only become a national priority and have the right resources thrown at it once we understand the big picture.
And I bet every commuter who gets stuck on a train waiting because there's been trespassers or there's been, because the leading police force, the last I heard, was the British Transport Police, who policed the railways. and they seem to be the big, almost one of the biggest targets. So, and
they've categorized metal theft as a tier one threat now.
So, and I'm glad you just reminded me of a really important thing that I like to make a point of, in that cybercrime is nationally a tier one threat. And you just have to look at the horrendous events of London and Manchester, mm-hmm. conventional terrorist attack. And there's nothing worse than that. And I wouldn't suggest anything different. But the way the threat is worked out is the level of threat, sorry, the likelihood of it happening and the impact when it does. Clearly that sits in the number one spot, because God forbid a loved one of mine or me or anybody who's listening got caught up in that. Nothing's worse than that for them and for their loved ones. Mm-hmm. But the likelihood, thankfully, statistically, is unlikely that it would happen. Whereas cybercrime and the risk to national security from a cyber attack is sitting right next to it, because although the impact, worst case scenario, money gets stolen out of a bank as well as a million others, we can live with that, but because we're literally still able to live. But the likelihood of it happening is the other way around. The impact is no comparison, but the likelihood is, it's just almost, it's like it when, not if certain measures aren't put into place, like financing my position and doing podcasts like this and getting a good message out there. It's all about, as I said, I think one of the greatest things was education, education, education. But again, education's all well and good. If you could sit there as a very poor teacher, if you don't communicate that well enough.
Yeah. And I wonder also, you know, I mentioned language earlier, and I wonder also if perhaps when the media are talking about cybercrime, if we actually used the same language that we use for other crimes, rather than talking about it in terms of ransomware, for example. Instead of saying it was ransomware, if we actually said this is extortion and blackmail.
Oh, that is brilliant, because I've actually, and you've said that independently of me, because I've used pretty much that as an example. So some would argue there's no such thing as a cybercrime, because, which obviously I'm not suggesting that for one moment, of course, but to put it into perspective, to get it clearly home to people, ransomware, what is it? It's criminal damage to your computer and it's blackmailing you. So if somebody was damaged, come in and damage your computer and then blackmailed you, you would think that was the worst thing, rightly so, the worst thing that's probably happened to you. But if you get subjected to a ransomware attack, you don't. It's not viewed like that when it should be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you look at, and you mentioned WannaCry and the effect it had on the NHS, I mean, it actually put people's lives at risk.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you're starting to get borderline terrorism. You know, and I think sometimes we really don't explain the seriousness of the impact of cybercrime happening to our society. And the media almost portray it as a victimless thing rather than as something that actually there are victims at the end of this every single time.
And I'd like to give a few examples of how true that statement is. A couple of things I'd say is, one, I would just offer anybody who wants to, who listens to this, to Google the definition of terror of a terrorist incident. And if you read the definition, I would be very shocked if you don't consider towards the end of that definition, what is clearly alluding to a large-scale electronic interference attack. That's the one thing I would say. And the second thing is, again, with our pursuit team, I won't go into great detail, but it's in the media. There was a guy who, at the very early days of the creation of our team, and he was a medical student. He would have become a doctor, and he got prosecuted for planting key logging software and devices on his lecturer's computers. Unfortunately, fortunately for him initially, because he got found out, his grades went dramatically up. So I'm thinking, if you carry on thinking this and he didn't get discovered, we've got potentially a very poorly qualified doctor here. And I remember seeing somebody making a joke in a comedy show the once saying, and he was talking about the quality of doctors, and he said, he made a brilliant statement. He says, when I'm on the table being operated, I want them to have straight A's, not to be barely qualified, or in this case, not qualified. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting there wasn't a reason why he wasn't doing his studies well, but this is what happened. His grades weren't very high, and he was worried, so he carried on basically a cyber attack on his lecturer's computers. So that could have then went on to having a very poorly qualified, and you'd say not qualified, doctor.
Yeah.
You definitely, as I said, real world affects real world, virtual world affects virtual world as well as the real world. And a really, really, really horrible, horrible thing to make reference to is that a very common thing that I hear from people is that they're not going to bother with me. They're just going to go after the big company. Well, I can say categorically that's not the case for two main reasons. One, you can be targeted individually, and there's a number of reasons for that. But if you look at big data breaches, like say TalkTalk, what did they steal? They stole a massive amount of data. So if we were to pick that apart, what's in that data? What is data? It's information. It's information about individuals a lot of the time, and it's for either credit card details so they can steal money, or it's passwords so they can then steal money.
Mm-hmm.
But they're targeting an individual potentially. So a scenario you could say would be an individual within a big company being sent an email that is extremely relevant to them, and they click on a link or download an attachment and just affected their network, and then they've allowed potentially the data for 10 million people to be stolen. So which is it? Like, it's a bit of a vicious circle.
Yeah.
Are we targeting an individual for company details? But is company details a large amount of individuals' details? And the unfortunate thing is, like, they talk about oil being liquid gold. This is the new oil. This is the new oil.
Yeah. And we do see this, of course, don't we? We see these data breaches, and then the data is appearing on the dark net up for sale. And it's, you know, it makes money. And, you know, people are obviously buying these databases because it benefits them. Absolutely. In their criminal activities. And that, I say this all the time, you know, when we talk about data protection, organizations need to genuinely reconnect with the fact that data protection isn't there for their benefit. It's there to protect the fundamental rights, you know, which are fundamental human right, of the right to privacy for the individual. And I think we really need to, as businesses, we need to reconnect with that. And, you know, I think we've almost lost touch with information as we've got more electronic. You know, when I entered the workplace, you could see it and touch it, and in some cases even smell it.
Yeah.
And I think now it's just electronics and bits and bytes, and businesses are losing sight of just how valuable and how important their information is.
It is the new, like, but instead of gold, then the gold, liquid gold, this is now. And it, like, does anybody think we're going to be less technical in 20 years time?
No,
absolutely not. Because look how we, and it's like going back to, was it Moore's law and about the rapid increase. I'm thinking you just have to look at what you can do now compared to 10 years ago and what you'll be able to do in 10 years time. So, and I speak to people regularly, and they say, oh, I'm not very good at computers, I'm not very good at cyber. And unfortunately, I've got really bad news. You don't have a choice in the matter, because even if you don't realize it, I guarantee you, if you're not, at the very least, some people use a smartphone and say, oh, I don't understand computers. You've got one in your hand. And to the point where people don't think, oh, I don't need antivirus on my phone. Everyone needs, without exception, antivirus. No matter what model of phone you've got, you need antivirus on your phone. For example, you've got all these keyless entries to vehicles. You've got technology for these cars, and it's brilliant. And to a large extent, straightforward car theft has virtually been designed out, you could argue. However, the companies, like some of the big companies for the cars that are very popular with a keyless entry, are now suggesting you go out and you buy the very old-fashioned crook lock for your car. Because unfortunately, if your keyless car is sitting on a driveway and it's got a crook lock on, and the neighbor has got one and doesn't have a crook lock, who's going to get their car stolen?
Yeah.
So you're also getting these constant circles. What
goes around comes around.
Yeah. Then.
So I wonder, are we likely to see some genuine activity in the area of cyber terrorism?
Well,
you know, so much of our lives is being connected now, and we're so reliant on technology, and we see so much being, you know, talked about now in terms of smart, everything smart, the smart buildings, smart cities, smart homes. And surely that's got to pose an attractive target at some point.
I think, again, when you look at the terrorist definition, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's written the way it's written. When you look at WannaCry and how the effect, as you rightly said, it caused 6,900 appointments to be cancelled or rescheduled. Poor people who are probably traumatized about having an MRI anyway were caught in the middle of it and couldn't get out. WannaCry was the National Cybersecurity Center categorizes a cyber incident or a cyber attack on a scale of 1 to 6, 1 being the highest and 6 being the more localized. WannaCry was only considered a category 2, so we haven't had a category 1, and unfortunately we haven't had one. And unfortunately, again with the old expression within terrorism, you have to be lucky every time, and we only have to be lucky once. Do I think it's going to happen? Sadly, I won't be. I'll be very disappointed and a bit shocked. Will I be surprised? Not necessarily.
Is the worst case scenario potentially a artificial intelligence driven ransomware?
Yeah, I suppose that is a quite keep you up at night scenario, to be honest. GCHQ are incredible people who are doing an amazing job, and they are preventing a lot of issues thousands of times a day. But they have to be lucky every time, and so far, so good. But yeah, I do feel. And people pay their taxes, they have the police to do policing, but I think you've just got to be realistic. You can't go to a cash point machine in the worst neighborhood and draw out £50 and walk around waving it like a flag. Don't be too shocked if you get it stolen. I'm not saying it couldn't be more wrong, but sadly there comes a point where you've got to be real.
Absolutely, we're not justifying the crime. We're simply
Oh
saying that
God.
if we don't do the basics right, if we don't look after ourselves, and if we don't help ourselves to stay safe, then we can't just rely on the police to be there in every possible scenario. So we have to get better at looking after our online data, looking after our online presence, choosing better passwords, doing all of those things that are going to effectively the equivalent of an online car lock.
Yeah, and it's two things I'd like to say there is that it's then like becoming a positive circle as opposed to a vicious circle, because then you're going to have the police less tied up, and then you'll get the service you rightly deserve, because when you need us, then we can come and we can give you this gold service. You, in an ideal world, I join the police, like most people have, for various reasons. But everyone will have our core reasons, because they want to do something meaningful. They want to play their part in assisting and helping people. I know it's ridiculously corny, but it is true. They want to do what they want to do. I've only ever worked in the public sector all my life, and I don't see myself doing anything other than public sector work, because to me, that's what getting up in the morning is for, to get up and do that. When you look at what you have to do, unfortunately, there is a clear necessity to do the basics right. And I'm glad I waffled there, because it reminded me of the second point, because the news that we all watch now has, I'm sorry, but I'll be totally honest, the news has become almost entertainment, and I find that quite sad. But without trying to allude, sort of indirectly criticize anybody, and apologies for that, but unfortunately, my point of highlighting that was something that I do myself when I do my presentations, or I should say even the police, in that our presentations sadly are quite negative, are quite negative. And the beauty is, one of the things I like to highlight is, sadly, I can talk to someone for 45 minutes and they get 5 minutes at the end of quite a bit more positivity. And Nicola Whiting was really good at highlighting how we can still deliver unfortunate messages in a positive way. And so I'm always conscious of this, but I know I still fall into the trap being a typical, because I'm from in the police. We do our presentations, sadly, we're only often delivering bad news. But what I like to say is that I find it really great when I look at another initiative, which the money from the UK government trying to make the hostile environment for the U in terms of cyber criminality. I highlight Cyber Essentials. And I think Cyber Essentials is brilliant, because they've done research and they found that the vast majority of cyber attacks was as a result of five key vulnerabilities. And they've sort of changed that now into calling it five key controls. And so I would say to people who listen to this and think that cybercrime is just a nightmare, and it is a nightmare. It's absolutely horrendous, and it is. However, it might surprise people to hear that you can do five very basic things and negate a majority of the risk. And then sadly, it's a case of it's the path of least resistance. But if we're all doing this, then it just becomes so much harder, because the five key control measures would be boundary controls, and that's referring to firewalls. Then it's talking about secure configuration, and then it's talking about access control. So on a business, would you allow somebody to have maximum access immediately? Mm. No, it's definitely a bit of a need to know basis, because you should only have access that you need access to, because maximum access can cause maximum damage. And sorry, just to go back to the firewalls, sometimes they're not configured correctly, or they're not even up and running. Secure configuration, I like to give a personal analogy for that, which is you buy a brand new laptop, there's a good chance it has two accounts on it, admin and guest. The first thing you need to be aware of is a username and password is quite likely to be a username and password, so that needs to be changed. And then delete guest, because that can be exploited to change the settings on your home networks. And again, it can be done on a bigger scale for larger organizations. So that's the first three. So the fourth and fifth one is there's two things: antivirus. And again, sadly, we are seeing sometimes that people have good antivirus and it's just not even turned on.
Right.
So then all you need to do is just turn the antivirus on, and then patching. And sadly, this was an issue for the NHS, and it was basically they hadn't done the appropriate level of patching. So worth bearing in mind is that the people who have coded and created Windows 10 is made up of 50 million lines of code. So that's food for thought, that is 50 million lines of code. And the really bad news is that there may be as many as five errors in every 100 lines of code. So that best case scenario, it offers an issue with functionality. Something's not working properly, and that's the best case scenario, because the worst case scenario is that it offers a vulnerability in your security. So when you look at the five key controls, just make sure your firewalls are appropriately configured, you've got secure configuration, and even as an individual, that you're not sharing passwords, or like I saw in one family on a personal basis, they had a central computer, five different logins for different members of the family. Great, it's fine. But if they were sharing the login, or somebody knew somehow the other logins, they've got full access control, which they shouldn't have. So that could cause issues. But it's a bit different for an individual than on a network, of course. And then with the antivirus, just make sure that it's appropriately set and it's up and running in place. And patch management. So the patch management, sometimes you can set it for auto update. And there's obviously pros and cons to a lot of stuff we do. Auto update, there is issues with that. But I would say to err on the side of caution, either do one of two things: auto update, or when you get that annoying bottom right alert saying there's updates available, to do it straight away, because lots of people leave it for a week or two and there's no harm done, but it's become public when it comes up, and that means it can be exploited in as quick as 45 minutes. So my point is, if you do nothing for security and then you do these five key controls, all the horrendous bad news that you're hearing about could potentially be negated by following strictly those five key controls. And I would encourage anybody to have a look at Cyber Essentials website, and they offer things that you can print off and follow for free. And I just think you're massively ahead of the game if you do that. And that's the point, a very long-winded answer to what you've said, is there's absolutely, I'll go out on a limb here and I'll say, if a police officer says, don't worry, we'll sort it, then I'm sorry, but I will highlight the police officer's lying to you, because you just have to look at what's called in academia as well, the routine activity theory. So we've got the problem, then we've got the target, and then we've got the prevention. Or they can call it different things. You can call it the criminal, the victim, or the police, or the capable guardian. And you only need to either secure up one of them to potentially take yourself out of that situation and becoming a victim of crime. So if you've done all the security stuff you have, sadly, you will probably no longer be a target. Partially because there's no such thing as 100% security. If I was to write 100% security, I would write 99, and that's the best case scenario. There's no such thing. But sadly, path of least resistance, if you do everything you should do, then sadly, the automated attempts on your networks and your computers and your devices will just go somewhere else. And you'll be told later by your antivirus, somebody was sniffing here and they were trying to do this and do that. But then if everybody does it, we're just going to make... Because sadly, in the past, the reason was the only the elite were able to hack people and cause cyber crimes. But sadly now, you don't need any cyber knowledge. All you need is awareness that people are offering ransomware and DDoS attacks for hire for sadly a very small amount of money. So you can just pay a little bit of money and you can have a network or a website crashed by a small fee because it's got there for service for hire now.
So there you go. Sobering thought there at the end. You can just go and buy it as a service. We do know, of course, that criminals are setting themselves up almost as professional software houses, as service providers, and they're prepared to sell their capability, as Patrick says there, not for very much money either. But some sound advice as well, Cyber Essentials, 5 key points. And I think if we all start to work together to be a much harder target, then we could make UK PLC a much safer place for us to live and work. You've been listening to the Advent IM podcast. With me today has been Patrick Mavrietty from the Regional Organised Crime Unit for Westminster Police. I hope you've enjoyed this and I look forward to the next podcast. Thank you.